All right, Shavosai, good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Kufayim Beis 172. And we are actually picking up on the last line of Kufayim Aleph Amud Beis 171b. Amalei Ravina Liravashi. Shavosai, our shir this morning is dedicated by the Elman family in memory of Michael's maternal grandfather, Hyman Koal, Chaim Usher Ben Naftali, on the occasion of his 55th yard site. Shamash Tavin Aliyah, the family in Nechama, Shkoyach. And also we'll say by the Lerner family, Le'ilo Yinishma's great-grandpa Joe Lerner, Yosef Ben Yitzchak HaKohen, whose yard site is today. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah's Neshama will have an Aliyah and the family in Nechama. So we'll say, so let's begin. A lot of beautiful Gemara today. So Amalei Ravina Ravashi, from the Ravashi Rav Kahana, top of Kufayin Beis, V'ha Idna, Deloka Avdinan Hachi. Now today that we don't do this. Now I will say, what's the this? So remember again, we spoke about yesterday, how there are certain ways that a person could go at certain steps that can be taken in order to avoid ishtar, especially ishtar mo'ukhar, a posted ishtar from being used inappropriately. So the Gemara says, now that today we don't take these protective measures. Take a look at the top of the Rashbam. Top of Kufayin Beis of the Rashbam. Ela kasvinon shtar mo'ukhar stama. Rather, Rabbi said, today we write a shtar mo'ukhar, right? A post-dated document, stam. The low cost of echrinu v'kasvinu. The kasvinon tavra alaihu. B'shas piron. The kasvinon zman b'shober. The low kasvinon l'istama. Ulochurva d'Rabbi Yossi l'ochashen. So also remember again, we discussed the idea that some of the ways in which one could protect themselves is in the shtar mo'ukhar. You explicitly write that this shtar was written not on the date that it possesses, but rather again it was dated at a later date. We also said that one of the ways you could protect yourself is to go ahead and on the receipt, go ahead and write the date of the shtar itself. So the Gemara says, we don't do any of these things. So to protect ourselves. So Amalei, you're supposed to listen to this. So the Gemara says, Amalei, second line, Kufayim Beis Amud Aleph, Rabbonon Takune Takine. I will say, here's what we know. The rabbis set up measures, created systems through which a person could protect themselves from inappropriate usage of shtaros. Manda Ovid, Mandalo of it, ihu de afsid anafshe. Both said it's a very profound statement. Here's the reality. The Rabbanon created mechanisms through which you could protect yourself from the inappropriate use of a shtar mo'ukhar. If you choose to use those systems, great. If you choose not to use those systems, then you have brought losses upon yourself. And if you've brought losses upon yourself, then that's your problem, not the halacha's problem. As I was saying, it's a very profound statement that at some point in time, all the halacha could do is create for you the mechanisms through which you could protect yourself from loss. But, I will say, it's a very profound yisod. You have to take responsibility for the nature trajectory of your life. Sometimes when things happen that we don't like, it's easy to blame anyone and everyone, especially Chazal. But so Chazal said, listen, we've given you the mechanisms to protect yourself. If you choose to avail yourself of them, great. If you choose not to, then you take responsibility for any subsequent losses. Amaluhu Rava Barav Shila Lahano Kasvi Shtara Aknaiso. Let's listen to this. Rava said to these particular individuals, whether they were Sofer individuals who were writing Shtari Akniyasa. And I will say, now what's Shtari Akniyasa? Take a look at the Rashban. Lahanach de Kasi Akniyasa. Kosve Shtar Matana. Shein Kasav Van Achrayis. Velo Asi Lemitraf Milukuchos. So we'll say, Shtari Akniyasa means any document, a document of conveyance. So the Rashban gives an example of here of a Shtar Matana. The idea of a Shtar Matana, we'll say, is that there's no Achrayis. Right, if I give you a gift and I choose to bolster your ownership of that gift through a shtar, that gift doesn't come with achrayis. I mean, I could give a gift with achrayis if I want, but there's no implied achrayis in a gift. V'lo amrin Rashbam, inami shtar mechira shekasa ban achrayis, shedina litrof lekuchos mishas mechira, de'idim mafki lehi lekala b'lo shtara. Or about the other possibility is that there is a sale of property, and that sale does come with achrayis, but it's not the document that generates the achrayis. Ultimately, again, it's the edim, the presence of the edim, and the fact that edim have a kol that generate the knowledge about the achrayis. So if you skip down a little bit to the Rashbam, he says, Hilchach, I yadi usun hahu yoma dak nisun be min hanosin matana o mocher mechira kasvu achshav osa yom shenastu hamatana v'mechira di ikalamechash shema achre king nasna la achre shelo kedin. The Bible says, so as we're going to see in the Gemara, Rava said to the people the following: If you are witnessing a transaction, for example, again the giving of a gift or a sale, the date in the shtar should reflect the date of the transaction. Right, look back in the Gemara for just a moment. Someone who Rava Bar of Shila Hanoa Kasi Shtark Nyasa. Ki Kasavisu Shtarak Nyasa. Oh, so when you write a document of acquisition, which I will say just means a document that gives us the information about an acquisition or transfer that occurred. Iyo di Isa Yomudiknisa Bay Ksovu. If you go ahead and you know the date that the actual transaction occurred, in other words, I will say sometimes it's possible that when you're writing a shtar, the shtar is just there to highlight the fact that the transaction occurred. But it's possible that what? That the transaction occurred on a different day that the shtar is being written. So Rava said to these witnesses, if you know the date, the actual date on which the transaction occurred, write that date in the shtar. However, again, v'ilo, if you don't know the date, v'ilo, kasvu yomad de kamay sube. Ultimately, again, write the present date, in order, ultimately, again, that the document not look like a lie. So, it's actually a very interesting idea. So, what Rava was suggesting is, best is always to write the transaction date in the shtar, even though what? Even though, again, that might not be the actual date of the shtar. If for some reason you're just not, or the present date, I should say, if for some reason you're just not sure about the date of the shtar, the date of the transaction, just write the present date in the shtar itself. Now, I want to point out something over here. The Rashbam, if you go back to that Rashbam, Lahanach Tekasiyak Ne'aisa, so I'll say, if you just go straight across in the Rashbam, just go right in the Rashbam, and skip down. Actually, you can just write, so he says, Kasu Asha Osa Yom, you see there's a period there. V'davka Shtari Akniyasa, Ava Shtari Hava, Shiyish Bo Achrayis, Lo Yichtov Ela Yom Shomid Bo Achshav, De'im Kein, Havelei Mukdam, Upasl, the Asi the Mitraf the Kuchos Mizmana Kasav. So also, if you notice again, this is why the Rashbam Dafka is setting up this Keshtari Akni Asa as dealing with a shtar that does not have achrayis, like a shtar matana. Because I will say, the problem with Rava's advice is, if we're talking about a loan, and I lend Reuven money, and that loan creates an encumbrance on Reuven's property, if I put in an earlier date than the date in which we are currently standing right now, that's a shtar muktam, and a shtar muktam is possible. But because it's about a shtar matana, where there is no achrayis, therefore Rava's just saying, the shtar should reflect the actual transactional date, even if that is earlier than the present date. But if for some reason you don't know the transaction date, then halacha lemaisa just put in the present date. Fine? So the Gemara goes weiter. Amru Rav l'safrei. Dechin amru Rav Huna l'safrei. Rav said to his scribes, Rav Huna said to his scribes, ki kaimisu bishili, kasvu bishili, va'af agav demesirin l'chu mili bihini. So we'll say, they said to the scribes the following. Good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. When you go ahead, and you are in Shili, so write location of Shili in the document, even though what? Even though you witnessed the transaction itself, or you were given the instructions in Hini. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. So I will say this is 2, 4, 6 lines down in the Y lines of the Rashbam. Kiya Savisu Bishili, Vatim Kosvim Sham, O Sahair Bishtari Mechira, O Shtari Hava, O Shtari Matana, O Zichron Edus, Kisvu B'Soch Hashtar, Makom Shatem Yoshen Sham B'Shaz Ksiva, Klomar, B'Makom Ploni Kasavnu Hach, Mashra'inu B'Makom Ploni. We'll say, so the case over here is the following. The case over here is where the witnesses, or the sofer, whoever it is, witnessed the transaction, or saw the transaction, in what we'll call City A. But the Shtar itself is being written in City B. So we'll say, so these Rabbanim, Rav and Rav Huna, are telling their scribes that when that happens, you need to record the names of both cities. You need to say, this document being written here in the city of Hini records the events that we saw in the city of Shili. The idea is you need both locations recorded in the document itself. So the Gemara says, Va'af agav demesirin l'chu mili bihini, ki kaimisu bihini, kasvu bihini. So too, again, if you're in the city of Hini, write, we are writing this document while we are in the city of Hini. Va'af agav demesirin l'chu mili bishili. even though what? You actually saw the actual transaction or were given your instructions while you were in the city of Shili. Okay? So Amar Rav Shmuel said, this is all just teaching us about the halachos of shtaros. So the idea is, the idea that they're saying is, there are two important locations. Where the shtar is being written, and where the actual transaction is being occurred. Where it actually occurred. And in the event that those are two separate locations, they both need to be mentioned in the shtar. Amar Rava. Rava said the following. Haiman. Listen to this case. Haiman did not get shtar bar me'azuzi. Listen to this, Rabbi Sai. I have a shtar. I lent Reuven $100. And what happens? All right, let's make it $1,000. I lent Reuven $1,000. So what happens? Va'amar, shavi nihili trei b'nei chamshin chamshin. I go to Beis Din. I say, Beis Din, do me a favor. Break this down for me into two $500 shtaros. They're both saying, now, why do I want two $500 shtaros? Because they will say, I know that Reuven is going to pay me back in increments, two increments of $500 apiece. So therefore, I will say, remember again, we're in this whole discussion over here because we spoke about partial payment of a debt. What do you do with the original loan document when you have partial payments? So we saw three of my chlokas, so I have a good eitzah. My eitzah is, go ahead, Beis Din, write for me two $500 documents. That way when Reuven pays me back $500, I give him one document. The other document is still there. So we'll say, what's the halacha? Lo meshavin aluhum. We do not do it. We do not do it. Now, we'll say, now take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Haiman dinokit. It's a 2, 4, 6, 7 lines down on the wide lines. Haiman dinokit. Malva dinokit shtar malva bar meyozuzi. Bar amar lahem kisvu li tre b'nei chamshim, chamishim, kishay par li alove chamishim zuz akra shtar shal chamishim, v'lo yitzarach lichtov shover, lo kasvino shlomi das alove. We'll say, we're going to see is now a series of cases where one of the parties to the shtar wants to change the shtar. And I will say, what essentially, I'm going to give you the conclusion even before we start the Gemara, which is, you can never adjust or change anything to do in a document unless, of course, what? You have the explicit consent of both parties. Even if it looks like something is objectively beneficial to both of them, you still cannot change it without the explicit consent of both parties. See here, I say case number one, I lent Reuven $1,000, I've got Shai says $1,000, I show up to Basin, do me a favor, give me two 500 stars. Right? Give me two 500 stars for this $1,000 star. At first glance, the logic seems to be pretty solid. Because this year Reuven's going to pay back $500 at a time. I'll give him one shtar at a time and we'll be done. We don't have to start redrafting shtaros. So the Gemara says the following, my time. So we don't do it. Why? Meaning, when we say we don't do it without the express consent of the lova, of the borrower. My time. Because we'll say ultimately again, the rabbis like to do things in a way that benefits both the borrower and the lender. So the Gemara says, Nechalei lemalva, kedei shiyakov leparo. So we'll say, the idea over here is, the truth is, it's in the malva's best interest not to get two $500 shtaros. Why? Because if there's just $1,000 shtar, then what happens? When the borrower pays back $500, so we'll say, what does the borrower get when he pays back $500? A receipt, a shover. Well, so we discussed yesterday that what happens when you're a borrower and you get the shover, it's in your best interest to what? Pay off the remainder of the debt as quickly as possible. Why? Because you're responsible for watching that shover. If something happens to that shover, you're going to be on the hook for another 500, for the same 500 again. Therefore, again, it's in the lender's best interest not to have two documents because that forces the borrower to pay back faster. And I will say it's in the lover's best interest for there to be $1,000 document. Why? Because when the borrower does go ahead and pay back $500, the shtar becomes pogum. I will say the halacha is when we say a pogum shtar, the Rashbam brings down over here, that's whenever you hold a document that says I owe Reuven $5,000. Excuse me, Reuven owes me $1,000. And then we know that Reuven paid back $500. In order for me to collect the rest of the shtar, I have to take a shvua. I have to take an oath. I, the lender, have to take an oath. But we'll say, because why? Because the shtar itself is pogum. The shtar is compromised because the amount written in the shtar is not the amount that's owed to me. But we'll say, it is considered to be in the best interest of the borrower if the lender has to take a shvua before getting repaid. Why? Because that ensures the honesty of the lender. So you see, the Gemara is pointing out over here is that it's not in the best interest of both of them to get two $500 shtaros. So the Gemara goes, Vait, Vamar Rava, Haiman dinokit trei shtari b'nei chamshin chamshin. So we'll say, listen to this. I have two documents of $500 each. against Reuven. So I lent Reuven $1,000 in total. And I have two documents of $500 each. And I go to Bezin. V'amar, shavinu nehili chad bar mea. I say, Bezin, do me a favor. Write for me one document of $1,000. One document of $1,000. So what's the halacha? I will say, lo mishavin alei. Bezin will not do it. Why? Because avad rabbana milsa denecha lehu lamalva, venecha lehu lalova. I will say, because Bezin will only do something that is objectively beneficial for the malva and the lova, and the reality is, over here, I will say that it is in the best interest of the malva and the lova that things remain as is. How so? So the Gemara says, necha lehu lamalva, ki eche delo nefkam shtare. So we'll say it's good for me to have $2,500 shtaros. Why? Because lemaisa, this way again, when the borrower repays part of this debt, I still have a fully intact shtar, the other $500 shtar, which is not pogrom in any way, and therefore I don't have to take a shvua to collect the rest. V'nechali lelove, k'dei shalal yakov leparo. And I will say it's in the love's best interest. Why? Because the love doesn't have to worry about a shover, he doesn't have to worry about a receipt, and therefore he doesn't have to feel the lachatz to repay. Amar avashi, hayman dinakit shtara bar me'azuzi, v'amar shavin hu nihili chad bar chamshin. So Mara, listen to this, Rabbi, listen to this third case. I lent Reuven $1,000. And what happens? I go and I come to him and say, Beis Din, do me a favor. Just write me one shtar for 500. I will say, now why would I be asking for one shtar for 500? So I will say, ultimately, again, I say that essentially I'm claiming that Reuven already paid me back 500. So all I need is $500 for the outstanding part of the shtar. If you look at the Rashbam for just a moment, so that's about 14, 15 lines up from the bottom. Amar Rav Ashi, Haiman Denakit Shtar, Milva Bar Meazuzi, Va'amalu L'Safri, Ksobu Chad Bar Chamshin, Me'ahuz Man Rishon, Shara Parali Hamosar, the Karash Shtar Zeh, Lo Kasvina Le Shtar Achrina, Lo Mizman Rishon, the Chosh Kim Mizman Shal Zeh Yom Ksiva Ve'ilach, Shema Shtar Parua Huzeh, the Yesh Lo Shover Le Lova Alov, the Yotzi HaMilva Al Shtar Shal Chamishim, the Yomer Chov Acher Hu, Shal Vesu the Chav HaMachar. So listen to this. I show up in Beis Din, I have a shtar for $1,000 against Reuven. I say, Beis Din, do me a favor, just write me a shtar for 500. Right? And that's it, because the assumption is, I'm claiming that Reuven already paid back 500. So Rav Ashi says, we do not do this. Gemara says, my taima, amrinon, hai mifra pare. It's possible, again, that Reuven paid back the entire debt. But if Reuven paid back the entire debt to Bosai, then why do I still have the shtar? Why do I still have the shtar? Because here's what happened. So what happens when Reuven repaid the debt? Reuven said, give me back the shtar. Because Bosai, that's what happens. When you borrow money, and then you pay back your debt, the borrower has the right to demand the shtar in return. I said, I'm so sorry, I lost the shtar, but here's good news. I'll go ahead and I'll write you a receipt. And I will say, what's the concern? The concern over here is that I will produce this $500 shtar, and when Reuven produces his shover, his receipt, I can claim that what? This shtar reflects a different debt. Vaharaya, that shover was for $1,000. This was for $500. This shtar is for $500. Therefore, I will say, again, as I said to you even before we started these cases, the bottom line is, even in situations where someone shows up in Beis Din and says, I would like a shtar modification, and the shtar modification appears to be innocuous and does not appear to really negatively impact anyone, or even better, appears to positively impact both parties, halacha l'maisa, the Gemara teaches me no shtar modifications without both parties present and with their express content. Consent. So good. So we'll say that's the sugya. Mishnah. Shnei Achim. We'll say this is a great case. Shnei Achim. Two brothers. Echad ani ve'echad ashir. One is rich and one is poor. This is not talking about spirituality over here. This is talking about, right, mamish, one is rich, one is poor. Now we'll say, now watch this. And what happens? V'niach lehen avi en merchas u'beis habad. Father dies and leaves behind the Yerusha. What's the Yerusha? The Yerusha is a merchatz, a bathhouse, and a beis habad, or a press, an olive press. So I'll say, so what's the halacha? Now, remember, just to understand the tension over here, the poor brother now sees in this Yerusha an opportunity for what? for revenue, to make money. Right? Remember, again, to own a bathhouse is a big thing. You could open that up and charge money. Olive press is a big thing. You could allow people to use it for money. The younger brother is going to have a vested interest in monetizing this Yerusha, whereas the older brother, who is, or the, they all call him the older brother, who's rich, has absolutely no need to monetize this Yerusha. So the Gemara says, so what do we do? Watch this. So the Gemara says, a son l'schar haschar l'emsa. If the father used them as revenue drivers, right? Meaning if the father operated them as a business, so the halachas will say that the sons continue to operate it as a business, and they split the profits. As son le'atzmo, I will say, what happens if the father did not operate the bathhouse or the Beis Chabad as a business, but rather, again, he just used it for his own needs? So we'll say, so now what happens? So the rich brother is happy with the status quo. The younger brother wants to monetize these items. So what could happen? We'll say, Hareya Asher Omer La'ani. The rich brother says to the poor brother, Kach lecha avadim v'yechatsu b'merchatz. It's okay, just buy for yourself some slaves, and they'll use the bathhouse. In other words, you could use the bathhouse also, just buy some servants. See, they both say, under normal circumstances, an individual does not have the need to own a bathhouse. Right? I'll use the bathhouse, but I don't have a need to own it. That's a large entity for individual use. So the older brother, the rich brother, says, no problem, just buy yourself some slaves, and they'll use it also. Now, of course, I will say, the poor brother doesn't have money to buy slaves, or he says, Kach lecha zeisim uba v'aseh bebeis avad, or just buy for yourself some olives, and you could use the olive press yourself. Rishon Lezion says, is another way of saying, so what happens, another way of saying, the Mishnah telling us that the older brother could say to the younger brother, tough luck, we're not monetizing this, we're not turning this into a business. Father used it for his private needs, we're going to use it for our private needs as well, and you can't force me to monetize this asset. So in other words, telling the poor brother, go buy some slaves or go buy some olives, is like the Talmudic way, the Mishnaic way of saying, go fly a kite. In other words, I'm not changing this, we're not turning this into a business, because that's not the nature of the asset. Therefore, even though you need the money from this asset, I am under no obligation to go out and monetize this asset. Fine. I will say, now we're switching back to shtaros. This is a great case also. Shnayim shehayu be'ir achas. Listen to this. So two guys who lived in a city. Shem echad Yosef ben Shimon, v'shem achar Yosef ben Shimon. So amazingly enough, right? Guy number one is named Yosef ben Shimon. Guy number two is named Yosef ben Shimon. Ein yecholim lehotzi shtar chov zeh al zeh. So we'll say, so the issue number one is, they are not allowed to lend each other money. And we'll say, so why can't they lend each other money? So obvious person will say, because Yosef ben Shimon lends money to Yosef ben Shimon, and then comes to collect money from Yosef ben Shimon, to which Yosef ben Shimon says, I'm the lender. To which Yosef ben Shimon says, no, I'm the lender. Therefore, again, the Mishnah says, and we'll discuss how they can lend money, but in order to avoid this, they don't lend money to each other. Look at the Rashbam. Remember again, under normal circumstances, he who possesses the shtar is the presumed malbez, the presumed lender. In this case over here, what they could claim is, no, you lent me the money, and I repaid the debt, and you gave me back the shtar, or I gave you back the shtar. So we'll say, because there's the same name, there is the inability to conclusively prove who is the malbez, who is the lova. Furthermore, again, the other townspeople are also prohibited from lending either of them money. Why are they prohibited from lending either of them money? Because they both say, again, if you lend Yosef ben Shimon A money, Yosef ben Shimon A could easily say what? It was him. It wasn't me. Nimtza. Le'echad ben shtaros of shtaros shal Yosef ben Shimon parua. They both say, let's say again, halacha lemaisa, someone had lent Yosef ben Shimon money. And it says, and the document is stamped, paid, shtaros shnehen paruin. Therefore, Rabbi said, because we don't know which Yosef ben Shimon this applies to, both of their loans will be considered to be repaid. So we'll say, so the Gemara says, so Kitzad Yasu. So let's say, I will say, again, you have to imagine cases like this came up all the time, where you have two people in the town who have the same name. So what does this mean? Two people in the town have the same name. They can't lend each other money. No one can lend them money either. Obviously, you can't operate like that. So what do you do? So the Gemara says, very simple, Yishalishu. Yishalishu will say means what? even though under normal circumstances, we just write Yosef ben Shimon. Your name and your father's name, when identifying you, when you have a case like this of Yosef ben Shimon, just what? Add a Zayda, right? Add a grandfather, Yosef ben Shimon ben Yaakov. Yosef ben Shimon ben Yaakov. So the Gemara says, "Hayu mishulashin." Okay, they have the same Zayda, right? Same name Zayda. Yichtavu Simon. Now, both say, then what you should do is in the document you try to simon. Now, what kind of simon? Look at the Rashbam. Yichtavu Simon. Yosef ben Shimon shu gutz. Right? Yosef ben Shimon, the short one. O Lavan, or the lighter one. O Gichor, right? Miyosef ben Shimon, Shu Aruch O Shachar, the dark one, the light one, the short one, the tall one. In other words, give some identifying. Things weren't as politically correct, you know, in the times of the Mishnah, right? So you go ahead. So meaning, write a physical simon about the individual. So also the Gemara says, okay. So what happens if they look the same? Not that they look exactly the same. Then yichtivu kohen. Then I both say ultimately again. Then if one of them is a kohen, you write a kohen. So I'll say at a certain point, you understand the point of the Mishnah is at some point in time, you just have to find something that distinguishes them, whatever it might be. Now the chaver will say, have to be careful. As he something that distinguishes them, that lamaisa is something that will remain for. So for example, you wouldn't distinguish them by, let's say, writing their profession, right? Because people change professions. So obviously, it has to be some type of simon that is inherent. That is inherent to the individual that ultimately allows you to go ahead and distinguish between the two of them. Fine. So says the Gemara. Hahu shtara dinafak lebeit dina d'rafuna. So listen to this. There was a shtar, this is very interesting. There was a shtar that showed up in front of the Beis Din of Rav Huna. Now obviously, meaning somebody showed up with this shtar. And what happens? Davik sivve ani ploni bar ploni levisi mani mimcha. Bosse, listen to the way the shtar was written. The shtar was written like this. I, Reuven, the son of Yaakov, Reuven ben Yaakov, borrowed money from you. And I will say, what's the chap in this case? The name of the lender, it is not written in the shtar. It just says, Mimcha, from you. Now, before you turn the page, look at the Rashbam, last Rashbam on the page, Kofayim Beis Mdalev, who started the Nafik Lebedina Dravuna, Favamuchsuk Bo Adam Echa, Shaya Toin Ploni Ben Ploni, Akasu Bazah Shtar, Kasu Bechasu Masrali, Lethi Shal Visiv Kafe Kachmaman, Kizama Sizim Verkin, Hotel of Sad. So we'll say, this case over here is a guy is showing up in Beis Din, and he's saying, I am the guy, I'm you. You understand? I'm the you in the shtar. I'm Mimcha in the shtar. So we'll say, so meaning we'll call him. We're just going to call him Ploni. Ploni shows up in Beis Din, and he's holding a shtar. And this shtar says, "I, Reuven ben Yaakov, borrowed money from you." So the guy who shows up in the Beis Din says, "That you in the shtar? That's me. That's me." V'haraya, I'm holding on to the shtar. So we'll say, listen to this. I'm a Beis. I'm a Rafuna. Mimcha. I feel the Kalusa. I feel the Mishavar Malka. So Rav Huna says, I'm sorry, we can't allow you to collect from the shtar. Why? Because Rav Huna says, we don't really know if you, the guy holding the shtar, is in fact the mimcha, the you in the shtar. You could mean the Reish Galusa. You could mean, right, could mean Shavur Malka, King Shapur. The idea that Rav Huna is saying, Rav Huna says, is that what? Is that if the document just says, I, Reuven ben Yaakov, borrowed from you, but doesn't identify who the lender is, the you is, then Lamaisa, what Rav Huna is saying is, just because a guy shows up in Beis Din holding that document, possession of that document is not enough proof that you are the you, that you are the anonymous lender who is named or not named in Mishtar. Rav Huna is not as much. Rav Huna is not as much paskening, as much as he's kind of questioning out loud. How can we allow you, the guy who's holding the shtar, to collect this loan when, in fact, you are not named in the shtar as the lender, and we don't really know with certainty who the lender is? So the Gemara says, "Amalei Rav Chista l'Rava." So Rav Chista said to Rava, "Puk ayin ba." So Rav Chista said to Rava, "Listen, go and investigate this matter." Dilo'arta boi la Rav Huna minach. Because tonight Rav Huna is going to come back, right? Rav Huna already raised his question. So you have Rav Chista saying to Rava, "Go and investigate the matter, so that you could report back to Rav Huna this evening and ultimately tell him what you think the halacha should be." So Nafak, so what happens? Rava goes out on his information gathering mission. Doc. he inquired, or I should say, he investigated the Ashkach, and he found the following idea. This thing we learned in a Braisa. Get sheyish alav eidim ve'in bozman. Both say, let's say you have a get that has witnesses on it, has signatures of witnesses, but there's no date. There's no zman. So let's say we learned, remember from our Gittin days, we learned about the absolute necessity of a date for a variety of different reasons. So we'll say, what's the halacha? What's the status of such a shtar? Abu Shal Omer, im kasuv bo geirashtiha hayom kosher. If it says in the document, I divorced you today, then the get is kosher. Why, Rabbi say? Alma hayom Yom hahu yoma dinafik b'mashma. So Rabbi say the chap over here is the following. If the get does not have a date in it, but it says that what? It says that what? That today I divorced you, then what, Rabbi say? The get will be kosher. Why? Because we assume that today means what? Today means what? Today means today. So what do you see? You see from here, Alma, hayomahu, when it says today, yoma dinafik b'mashma. We assume that today means the day, today, that the get is surfacing. Why does that for us? Hachanami mimcha meahu garba dinafik mitusei yadei mashma. Therefore, again, Rabbi said that halacha lemaisa, when you have a document, and the document says, I borrowed money from you, we assume that who is the you? The you is the person who is holding on to the shtar. In other words, Rabbi saying, what Rabbi essentially was saying was the following, that when you have certain ambiguity inherent in a shtar, we go ahead and we go ahead and we resolve, or we dispel that ambiguity through circumstantial reality. We dispel ambiguity through circumstantial reality. So if the get says hayom hazeh, today, and there's no date in the shtar, we assume today means what? Means what? Today, the actual date on which I'm standing. So too, Rabbi posits, when the document says, I, Reuven ben Shimon, borrowed from you, we assume that who is the you? Who is the you? The person who is holding the shtar. So we'll say we dispel ambiguity through circumstantial reality. Someone should write that down. I think it's a good formulation. Right? This is recorded. Good. So only Abai is the following. The Dilma Abishol Krebeloz Esfilet. So we'll say, so one second. Sabai says, well, maybe not. Maybe Abishol says what he says by this man in the get. Why? Because he holds the Krebi Eliezer. What does Krebeloz Esfilet say? The Amr Eide Mesira Karsi. So we'll say, remember again, maybe by the get, even if there's no Zman, the get is going to be Kasha. Why? Because maybe Abishol holds like what? Or like who? Like Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer holds Eidi Mesira Karsi. Also remember this machlokas, Eidi Chasima Karsi, Eidi Mesira Karsi. Eidi Mesira Karsi means it is the witnesses who witness the giving over of the document who create the effectiveness of the shtar. Therefore, again, says the Gemara, maybe that's why, even if there's no date in the shtar, it's okay. The Eidi Mesira will know ultimately, again, the date in which the shtar was given, the shtar was written, to which the Gemara says, Avahocha, but here Rabbi say, in the case where the lender is not named by name, but it just says Mimcha from you, Lechosh Lenefila. The Rebbe say, maybe we should be concerned that what? The real lender, what happened? What happened? The real lender lost the shtar. Lost the shtar. The Rebbe say, if you have a shtar that says, I, Reuven ben Shimon, borrowed from you, the Rebbe say, what happens if you lose that shtar? What happens? Anyone who finds it could easily claim that what? That he's the lender. That he's the lender. So they twitch the Gemara says, Amalei, no, we're not choshesh that people lose stuff, right? We're not choshesh that ultimately, again, someone dropped the shtar and lost shtar. So we'll say, in other words, there's another way of saying that we assume a certain level of documental vigilance, right? We assume that if a person has a document that Lamai said they're holding, it's good, right? Documental vigilance doesn't work. We assume a certain level of vigilance that people aren't going. If I lend Reuven money, I'm not going to lose that shtar. Therefore, again, the nefila lo chashinon. We're not worried about it. How do I know that we're not choshesh ultimately again for someone losing the document? I'm also listen to this. I'll tell you how. This nan shneim shahayu beir achos. Shem echad Yosef ben Shimon. V'shem echad Yosef ben Shimon. So let's remember again. This is our Mishnah. There's a city, and in the city you have two residents. One of them is named Yosef ben Shimon, and there's a second guy named Yosef ben Shimon. What's the halacha? Ein on yecholim lehotzi shtar chov ze al ze. They both say they are not permitted to lend money to each other, as we just spoke about before. But lo achar yachal lehotzi alein shtar chov. And they both say someone else can't lend either of them money, either, out of all the reasons we discussed before. Ha, but what can you see? Ha heim alachirim yicholim. The Bible said, but what do you see over here? That they would be permitted to lend others money. So it's like, even though they can't lend each other money, because again, out of fear, that it's not really going to be collectible, and even though others can't lend them money, because when you show up at Yosef ben Shimon's house, he's going to tell you what? I'm not the lender, I'm not the borrower, it's the other guy who's the other Yosef ben Shimon. But yeah, I will say, what do you see? That ultimately, again, they are permitted to lend others money. They're permitted to lend others money. So the Gemara says, but why is that? Lechosh l'nefila. It will say, if you are choshesh that people lose documents, then how can you allow either of them to lend money to others? After all, what? After all, why don't you say that if you let them lend other people money, when one of them shows up to collect, why aren't you choshesh that what? This Yosef ben Shimon is not the real lender. The other guy is the other Yosef ben Shimon is the real lender, but rather he dropped the shtar, and this the other one found it. Elav shmamina l'nefila lo chayshinon. Rather, I will say, what do you see over here? You see that we're not choshesh for people losing their documents. We're not choshesh for that. To which the Gemara says, Abai will say, well, there's a difference. L'nefila dechad lo chayshinon, l'nefila derabim chayshinon. I will say, to which Abai says, there's a real fundamental difference in those cases, I will say. What's the fundamental difference? I will say, in the case, ultimately, again, of Shnei Yosef ben Shimon. So, when we're saying Achoshesh v'nefila, because there are only two people who could potentially take advantage of the shtar. Who are the two people who could potentially take advantage of the shtar? Yosef ben Shimon 1, Yosef ben Shimon 2. In that case, the Gemara will say, listen, we're not going to let them lend money to each other, we got it. We're not going to let others lend money to them, we got it. But they can lend money to others. But what about the fact that I should be choshesh? That's what? That maybe the Yosef ben Shimon who shows up with the shtar to collect is not the real lender. The real Yosef ben Shimon was the lender, lost the shtar, and the second Yosef ben Shimon. So the acting where says, l'nefilo lo chashinam. I'm not worried about that. But I will say, says Abai, that's different than the case we're dealing with over here. What's our case? Our case, I will say, is where a guy shows up in Beis Din. And what does the shtar say? He's coming to collect his debt. What does the shtar say? The shtar says, I, Reuven ben Yaakov, borrowed money, lava mos, mimcha, from you. Abai will say that even if under normal circumstances, you don't say chashinu l'mefila, in this case you have to be choshesh for the fact that maybe the real owner of the shtar lost it. Why, Abai? Because this shtar is so ambiguous. This shtar is so open-ended. This shtar could have belonged to anyone. And because it could have belonged to anyone, therefore what? A guy showing up in Beis Din holding that shtar ultimately is not enough proof that he is the true malva, that he is the true lender. So we'll say, what the Gemara ends off with, we'll stop over here for today, but we'll say what the Gemara effectively ends off with is this really incredible fundamental case. See, here's what we have. Remember, we begin ultimately with the case of Shnei Yosef ben Shimon. The Gemara then ends off with a real fundamental shaila. We'll say, what's the fundamental shaila over here? The fundamental shaila is, if when you show up in Beis Din with a shtar, are you, and let's say again, you are not named in that shtar, do we assume that he who possesses the shtar is the rightful owner of that shtar? Or do we say, if it's so ambiguous, chayshinan l'nefila, that we're choshesh that perhaps, again, the real owner of the shtar lost it, and because we can never ascertain who the real owner is, therefore the shtar is uncollectible. So do we say that possession is what establishes the fact that you are the malva, or do we need some additional inherent proof in the shtar? And Meretz Hashem to be continued tomorrow. Shkoyach.